6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Look at this. This is arrogance. This is our need to fix everything. It's what drove us to study the mystic arts in the first place.
And look where we are.
Deranged.
I will be whole again.
No, your marbles are long gone.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm Jason.
I'm Carl.
And I'm the real Brian.
Woo! And this is House Podcastica What If Edition.
This week we'll be covering What If Season 1, Episode 4. What if Doctor Strange lost his heart instead of his hands?
No. Well, first off, of course, I just want to say welcome to you guys. These are my friends, Brian and Carl. Welcome to the show, guys.
Dude.
Glad to be on.
Thank you.
Great to have you both.
Yeah, it's good to be actually talking with you in person again. It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been a while. I just guested on Brian's show. Brian's another podcaster. He has The Real Brian Show, and it was a ton of fun. It had been too long, and now I'm glad to have these guys on. So I've known both you guys for years at this point, which is kind of crazy.
We go way back to first podcast movement, and then Heroes and Villains and all that good stuff.
Yeah, because Brian and I, we were sort of getting in podcasting and trying to, you know, hustle and go into conventions. And so we'd hang out there. I think we roomed together once or twice. And
quite a few times, actually.
Yeah. Then I brought Brian in. We would moderate for the Fan Fest conventions, which had all those Arrowverse people that Brian knew everything about and I didn't know anything. So you were a huge help with that. And that's also where I met Carl, because he was at one of those conventions. Yeah. And we've been friends ever since. And we like to geek out on stuff. So I thought it would be good to have you guys on to talk some MCU.
Yeah, definitely.
Excited, man. Thank you.
So with that, let's get into our top three highlights of this week's episode. It's What If Season 1, Episode 4, What If Doctor Strange Lost His Heart Instead of His Hands? We usually start off just by saying in general, without getting too deeply into it, whether or not we liked the episode. So Brian, what'd you think?
I really liked it. In fact, so I should say, you know, because I haven't been on yet, that I kind of watched all of these within a binge amount of time within the last few days, because I was getting ready to get started on it and I hadn't yet. Finally got a chance and I said, well, now I have to, because we got to get through episode 4 now.
Yeah.
To me, episode 1 was, you know, it was okay. I wasn't terribly excited. It had potential and it had a cool concept that I don't think they executed on very well. Maybe they didn't have enough time. I don't know. Episode 2 was fun. I liked it. And then 3, I was like, okay, this is good now. I like this now. And then 4, wow.
Just getting better and better, huh? Yeah.
As far as the concept goes. Now, from a show standpoint, I think it's a good show. I'm having fun with it. It's not blowing me away. And I hope that doesn't disappoint anyone right now.
No, we want you to be honest. And you know what? For me, every one of these, including especially this one, on first watch, on second watch, I liked it better. Because I always watch them twice. And especially in my experience, when you podcast on something, you tend to appreciate it more because you're really diving into the details. And with the first episode, at first I thought, yeah, this is just like Captain America, the First Avenger, except it's Peggy instead. But I started to appreciate more, I think, with the what if concept. And Marvel does this really well. They bring people who aren't comic book geeks and aren't used to the crazier concepts in gently. They take their time with it. And with the whole multiverse thing, and they're teasing it out, you know, because they're all about character first and getting you attached to the characters so that you will then care about all these crazier concepts that the characters that you care about are getting involved with. Right. Yeah. So one of the things they did with that first episode was to do one that wasn't that much different from what happened in the movie, just to kind of ease people into it. And also I think the point was that, you know, there's this whole theme through the What If series so far that your character kind of determines your circumstances versus the other way around. And because Peggy Carter has a similar character to Steve Rogers, things kind of went similarly for them. And then the second episode was like a counterpoint to that, where we had T'Challa come in and take over Peter Quill, and they're so different that things turned out way different. So it was like a counterpoint to it, you know? And when I start thinking about these concepts, it makes me like them a little bit more.
Yeah. And I think that was the thing that when I came into the show, watching a preview, reading a little bit about what it's going to be about, I was excited for that what if concept because it is cool. And the idea was, at least in my mind, that it was going to explain that if, like, for example, Peggy Carter is Captain America, then what's going to happen? You know, how is that going to affect the whole universe? How is that going to change the timeline within that alternate reality? And they didn't really go into that very much. And that's
didn't
what
change
I was
much.
Well, and that's well, it, but
that's
did,
what
but
I'm
it,
saying. That's because Peggy Carter is she's an honorable person, a courageous person, just like Steve, you know, so they kind of handled things similarly.
But they didn't really go into it in the first episode. Then in the second one, though, they started to go into a little bit more about how this one person changes so many things. And then it was a little more in the third one. And then by, you know, this one that we're talking about today, they really went into it. And so now I'm feeling good about the concept for sure.
Yeah, it just when everyone was killed, then you felt better.
Oh. I did. Basically. I was like, thank God, everyone's dead.
No, Brian's so dark.
What about you, Carl? What did you think of this one?
So out of all four, this is definitely my favorite so far, by far. Just like Brian mentioned, episode one was more like just a replacement episode. Like, let's just replace Captain America with her, right? So I wasn't really too much of a fan of that episode. Same with episode two. Didn't really care about that one either. I mean, T'Challa becoming Star-Lord or whatever that was. But three and four, especially four, was I loved it. It kind of reminded me of Flashpoint Paradox. Mm-hmm.
You got to watch, in order to appreciate episode two, you got to go watch Guardians of the Galaxy, though.
I do owe you that. That's right. I do have to watch that.
Wait, have you never
that's
seen right. it?
No, because I'm not.
Man. Calling out Carl here. Sorry.
Oh, no, I didn't know that, though.
No, I'm not a fan of the Star-Lord actor. That's why I haven't watched
it. Oh, dude, how did I never know that about you, Carl?
Never asked. You know everything else?
No, but we've talked. No, I do know everything else. No, but I mean, we've talked Marvel for so long. I for some reason, I thought you'd watched
it. I mean, and you know, my first thought when I found that out was like, oh, you got to watch it. But then Carl mentioned he doesn't really like Chris Pratt's humor. And I'm like, oh, well, then you might not like Guardians of the Galaxy, you know, because.
Yeah.
It is kind of that dopey guy kind of thing.
I thought I knew you, Carl.
Yeah, I'm sorry to burst your bubble, man. I do what I can.
All right, let's get into our top three highlights. Brian, what do you got for number three?
Okay, how about, where do I start? How about this? This one's a deep one. You ready for this?
Hit me.
Ready.
I'm ready to hit you guys with deep, All right.
Make it happen.
It didn't surprise me, though, that a version of Doctor Strange in this particular situation, losing the love of his life, would be consumed and obsessed with saving his love if he thought he has the power, which he did, of course. And then I got to thinking, and this is where the depth comes in here. This is a common aspect for each and every one of us, that we all have this potential to go down an obsessive path because, dang, why didn't this work? Or, you know, I wish I could bring this person back, or I wish I could right this wrong, or, you know, fix this regret, whatever it is, fill in the blank. And if we think we have the power to do it, we get into this obsession and we go after that. And then only at the end, like we all think, hey, we're just going to keep going. We're going to keep going. But only at the end, when we destroyed literally everything around us, maybe not the entire world and everyone, but we've destroyed everything around us because we've been so self-centered, do we realize the damage that we've done? So there was this, like, this whole story in episode 4. I just kept thinking about it and going, man, this isn't just like a nice little narrative, but dang, this is something we all need to, I mean, I think we could all learn from, because any of us could do this. And we all have some level of power or not. So
yeah,
we sorry, get fixated. I told you I went deep.
No, I love it, man, because that's really insightful, in particular with the character of Stephen Strange, because
yeah.
I mean, I went back and watched Doctor Strange just to refresh myself on all this. And he's the kind of guy who thinks he can fix everything.
Yeah, he does.
So that plays into what you're saying. And yeah, like we get fixated on things, and sometimes, like if you, you say you lost something, you lost, I don't know, the coat that you wanted to wear that day, just a small thing like that. And you're going to be late and you're like, no, I need to find it. I know where it is. I need to find it. And you look around and you spend a half an hour looking for it, and then you're late. I mean, that's a dumb little example, but sometimes it's better to just let go of something in order to cause less damage, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know if that plays into what you were thinking, but it's
no, it's true. I think it starts small.
Fixated. Yeah.
His first thing was, you know, I gotta save, gosh, what was her name? I'm already forgetting.
Christine.
Thank you. I'm thinking, you know, all I could think of is Rachel McAdams, but who did voice it, right?
Yeah. They all came back.
Yeah. It was
Benedict
so
Cumberbatch, Wong. That's cool. That one cool thing about this episode, all the main actors were back. Yeah.
'Cause 3, they didn't.
No.
As much. So
there's in each episode, there's been at least one big one that's voiced by someone else.
Yeah. This was good. So I agree that, you know, he started off by saying, I want to save Christine, and goes back and he tries it that one time. And you'd think, like, hey, it's going to work. But then it pulls that, you know, film version of the time machine where it's like, it doesn't work. And like there's no way. Yeah, exactly. And then it just keeps going deeper and deeper and deeper. And then he takes that one power. I'll just start small. And then he takes the next one and the next one. And then all of a sudden he's all consumed with, I want everything.
Yeah. At first he asks, can I please have one of your tentacles? And then he decides to take it. But yeah, even that first time he went back, I even got the impression it wasn't necessarily even to save her, but more just to revisit her, or at least he didn't try anything different. He just went down the same path and got into the same accident. Then the third time, I think, is when he decided, well, let me try something different, see if I could prevent this from happening.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome, man. Carl, what's your first point?
Yeah, similar to what Brian mentioned on that one. And I just call it a bad or evil Strange, where I don't know if it was Batman that said this, but it's you live a hero, or you live long enough to see yourself become the villain or the bad guy, basically. I don't know who said that. I think it was Batman, but that's kind of what this reminded me of, right? Doctor Strange, basically, with all his power and kind of impulsive behavior, wanted to do what he could to save his wife. And he went down this path where it was just, he kept trying over and over and kept failing, and he started to corrupt himself. And he became this monster, right? Even when Christine saw him at the end, he was this monster that she didn't even recognize. And he did it to himself, basically.
That's hilarious. She's like, wakes up in this post-apocalyptic world with this, like, oh, demonic fang creature. It's me, Christine. What the hell, man?
Oh, my gosh.
It's fine.
Yeah.
And that's the thing with it, too, is, like, you know, when we think of going back to do something different to save someone you love, right? What we never think about is, what about all the other people that knew of this person and this person died? What happens to their life when you make this change, right? So, I mean, it's one of those things where it's, you have to just accept it at a certain point, right? Because you keep going on this rabbit hole, you're going to end up corrupting yourself and just causing your pain to escalate, basically. And just to go off of what Brian said, I completely agree. And I was my number three as well. It's just Watcher Strange going on this path of just trying to do something that he knew he had powers to do, but he went about it incorrectly. I mean, I don't even know if there's a right way to go about it, right? Going back to do something like that. Yeah.
Because this is a tragedy, you know, in the classic sense. And in a lot of like Greek tragedies, you kind of see where it's going right from the beginning. It's only the main character through hubris and blindness that doesn't see it. And you know, at the end he's screaming, I didn't mean for this to happen. But dude, from the very beginning, they're saying, hey, tinkering with time can weaken the fabric of the universe. And the ancient one says, Stephen, this path only leads to darkness and the end of this reality. Please do not do this. So it's sort of like, you were kind of clued in.
Oh yeah. How many times did I warn him?
It'll be interesting to see from overview, if you look down at the timeline, to see, did all these different events that Strange caused create all these different, you know, like points in time, basically? They're all splintered.
Yeah. You mean like every time he went back, did that create a new
timeline? It created another timeline. Correct.
I saw a speculation that if you go back in time, like you blip back to another point in time, that will create a path. But maybe with the way Strange does it, where he reverses time, that it did not make another timeline, like in the movie or even in this episode, they show it where he's making the apple go back and forth in time, eaten to not eaten, that maybe that just doesn't create a new timeline. But I don't know. I guess it doesn't really matter whether it does or not.
And I mean, okay, we've all seen Loki, I hope. Maybe.
Yeah.
Okay. So you know how this is a spoiler. So if you haven't seen Loki, I'm sorry, but
it's okay. We're all fans.
This is one of those things where they were talking about the whole timeline and, well, you know, Loki, you can't do this because it's creating all these alternate timelines, but well, wait, how did Doctor Strange go back and do, oh, well, that was fine. You know, wait a minute.
That why was that fine? Planned or whatever. That was supposed to happen.
Yeah, but they didn't really explain why that was planned and why that was okay. Oh, well, because Thanos upset the timeline. Okay. But that's the thing, that they should have gone a little more into that, because you kind of wonder, okay, well, how many things did Doctor Strange do that was okay? And then why is this one not okay? Why is she pivotal to, like, she cannot be saved. Why is that?
Yeah.
They didn't explain that. Although I agree in the sense that it totally is a great story. I just was curious, like, why wasn't that?
They did say that if he goes back and saves Christine, that he would never have become Doctor Strange, because he wouldn't have learned or wanted to learn that power, basically.
Okay, true.
Yeah,
that's a good point.
As far as I know, this whole absolute point in time is a new concept for the Marvel universe. There's something similar in Doctor Who called a fixed point in time, but it's basically where this certain thing can't be reversed because of whatever reasons. But the ancient one suggests that it's because, well, she says her death is an absolute point in time, unchangeable, unmovable. Without her death, you would never have defeated Dormammu and become Sorcerer Supreme and the Guardian of the Eye. So I don't know if that means that's why it's an absolute point in time, but that's what she suggests. And in the movie,
does make sense.
He doesn't need her to die. It's about his hands getting crushed.
Yeah, and it's still a loss.
And looks for a way to fix that. And that's how he becomes Doctor Strange. So it did make me think, well, if she died, then couldn't he just have another accident that crushed his hands instead? Couldn't the universe like course correct, as they say, loss?
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. Well, either way though, it was fascinating in that particular situation. And I already mentioned this, you know, with the movie, The Time Machine, and I know that's different than the actual book itself, but did you guys see that? The original? Well, not the original. I'm sorry.
Was it with Christopher Reeve or no?
No, I'm thinking
that's somewhere in time. No, I haven't seen it.
Okay. So the 2002 version, I haven't seen the 1960 version, but anyway, the 2002 version of The Time Machine, basically in there, he loses his love.
Is this H.G. Wells, like Morlocks and all that?
H.G. Wells, wrote the book. And the book is a little different. Well, it is still different. There's still some similarities in the movie, but in the beginning of the movie, the motivation for him building the time machine was because he lost his love. So then he builds a time machine to go back and save her. And it's the exact same story where no matter what, she would still die a different way.
Yeah.
Because that couldn't be changed. And it caused madness and obsession and just, I mean, it's the exact same story. So when I was watching this, I'm like, okay, it's not a new story, clearly. And I'm sure it wasn't even a new story in the time machine of the actual movie itself. But that was kind of funny to watch how it's like, okay, this is basically you can't change it no matter what you try. It's just going to cause more madness. And the more you actually try to change it, the more you're going to hurt something else.
Yeah.
And it was that same thing. And I mean, I like that story though. It's a good story for us to know.
I mean, a lot of these similar concepts come up in different time travel related shows and stuff. And the one thing that I feel like just about every time travel movie and show has in common is that if you start thinking about it too much, your brain's going to hurt and you're going to
absolutely.
You're going to have things that don't quite make sense, you know?
Yeah. And then you just got to go watch Primer.
Oh my God. Holy. Yeah. Anybody who wants to be confused,
wrinkle your brain.
Primer. Yeah.
It kind of makes sense actually, but it's still like, whoa.
Yeah. I mean, for me, just when I thought I had a handle on that, I just suddenly got like super confused and realized I didn't know anything. Okay. My turn. My first one is about the darkness of this one, because it was the darkest of the four so far.
Yeah, it really was.
But I dig that. I mean, for one thing, I like the idea of really changing things up. Because this is an anthology series, you can vary the tone, and I like that, and explore different types of stories. And the What If comics do that. I think they do it pretty often, where it can go really badly just because there aren't really any consequences, you know, it's just a one-off. But so it was fun to see, I mean, in a horrifying way, to see that. Even last week, that was pretty dark because all these original Avengers died before they could make the Avengers. But at least there was that note of hope at the end, where this at the end was just really sad. Everyone dead except for Doctor Strange. But I feel like this episode in general had kind of a demonic feel. And Doctor Strange deals in the mystic arts, which already is kind of dark, but so I could see the story going that way. But like, there were some really chilling moments, like him absorbing these creatures into himself and the way he did it with that like light coming out of his eyes and his mouth.
Yeah.
And then the way that his appearance would change for a second to reflect the creature. And he, like when the dragon came into him, he looked like Satan. And I'm like, I think both my co-hosts today are kind of religious. So I just wanted you to know that I did not bring you on for the satanic episode on purpose. I didn't know.
All good.
You know, it's just a story, but
it's fascinating to me though. Don't worry.
Good. Okay. I mean, I don't want to make anyone uncomfortable, but just, yeah, like the runes and the way they light up. And I love the spell of Vishanti on like whenever the evil Doctor Strange would shoot at the good one and the runes would light up on his skin and everything. I guess that's not super dark, but just in general, I mean, the way that he changed at the end where his eyes got all shady and his voice was lower and even got like kind of like this when he got.
Yeah.
Angry and you know, the way poor Christine at the end has to deal with him with these tentacles coming out and all that stuff. It was a dark episode,
you know. And when I say that, it's interesting, it's cool that they did actually acknowledge the fact that taking on each creature's power would change him. Yeah. And I'm glad they did, because it's not just I absorb your power and I'm fine, because the kind of power that some of those creatures clearly had was in the darker side.
They came from like the dark dimension. Yeah.
So it is natural that would actually change who he is and you know, transform him and make him grotesque and everything. And I'm glad they showed that. And also how his eyes were super dark at the very end after he had absorbed all the power. You could see like centuries of, you know, despair, like a weight and torment on him. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so at the very end, you know, when he's showing his true colors essentially, and Christine's seeing that, it's kind of like, okay, you just saved Christine, but at what expense? She doesn't want you anymore. I mean, who would want that?
Yeah.
She doesn't recognize tragedy, you.
Right? Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And like, yeah, two things with that. One, yeah, because he fights a mirror image of himself at the end, but mm-hmm. I mean, they already had one difference because one of them made the decision to go have tea with Wong and the other one decided to keep, you know, trying to bring Christine back, but yeah. they were still basically the same person. But I think, yeah, what really changed the misguided one is bringing all those, that evil into himself. Mm-hmm. So that made him a lot more different. But also, I thought about in the movie, cause I, like I said, I just watched it again when Mordo in the movie talks about magic relics. He says some magic is too powerful to sustain, so imbue objects with it, allowing them to take the strain we cannot. And I'm like, yeah, this is kind of the opposite of that. He was taking all that strain into himself and it was yeah. sort of corrupting his soul. And it made me think of Anakin Skywalker. You know, it's yeah. almost the same thing. He wanted to cheat death and
yeah.
so he went down a dark path.
Yeah, that's true. I was surprised how the Ancient One, not surprised, but like pleasantly surprised, I guess, about how the Ancient One had come in and said, yeah, I split you two. You're in the same universe, but there's two of you.
Yeah, I don't get that. Like, don't they live in the same house when they run into each other? I don't get
Well,
it.
He kept time traveling. That's the thing.
Okay, so he the was other on one, vacation.
Well, that's a good point. So once again, they didn't really explain that. But when there's time travel involved, which, by the way, would be my second point, is I love time travel. I love the intricacies of it. I love, you know, the brain twisting of it, time paradoxes. I love it all. So it's really cool. I'm glad to go into this stuff. But if he's time traveling, then technically he, like the other good Stephen Strange, would be existing without knowing about the other one because the other guy keeps going back and back and back and back.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And then he ended up in that, whatever that was, where he's trying to, you know, absorb everything, the books and everything, the library.
Yeah. The library of Cagliostro, I think.
Yeah. What was interesting is at first I didn't catch this and then I went, wait a minute, why is that guy dying? And then I'm like, oh, that's right. He'd been there for centuries. That guy was really young when he got there. And then he was dying at the end. And I thought, well, I didn't realize how much time had passed until they said centuries of doing that.
Yeah, I think that was a surprise.
But then, yes, when she split him, that was interesting that she came back to do that.
Just realized something, too. See, now I thought if he was in there for centuries, then wouldn't he have missed the whole Infinity War and not been able to save? I mean, Doctor Strange was crucial in that, like, Thanos would not have been defeated if not for Doctor Strange. But there was another Doctor Strange.
Yeah, because this isn't the one that's our universe.
Yeah, which is why I think it's like a parallel universe almost.
Yeah. But I mean, I got the sense, I don't know for sure because it's kind of vague, but I got the sense that when the Ancient One split them, they were still, I mean, I think she even said it, there's, it's like two possible versions, but in the same timeline, in the same universe, I think.
So yeah, yeah, but I'm saying
the
that
same planet, but
our Stephen Strange was, he lost his hands, so that would be in a completely alternate universe.
That would be alternate. But if in this reality, this one, Thanos still came and tried to take over, I mean, maybe he didn't in this reality, but if he did, we still had the good version of Doctor Strange to deal with it.
So the Dark One was somehow protected by time travel?
Or was,
or just not like present, not around.
The same universe, but like a different frequency almost, it seems like, right? It's weird.
Yeah. Time travel. It wasn't totally, yeah, right. Anything else on that one, Brian?
No, not for me on that.
Okay. Carl?
Yeah, it was, it's funny because I put darkness on my number two as well. And how, like, when he was absorbing those creatures, just like you said, the visuals that you got where his, you know, his, it had all these like evil kind of fast frame clips happening. And that kind of thing to me was like, wow, this is really dark. And I actually love it.
And yeah, I was it. Like, I like horror movies and stuff like that. So
you two like that dark stuff.
Yeah, we do. Yeah.
So I'm watching this and I'm like, I can't, if this is a sample, we might get in the new movie. I'm all for it. Let's make this happen.
It's right? supposed to be kind of horror movie like, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, the new Doctor Strange movie?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
it's supposed to be
that.
Pretty horror. Yeah.
Interesting. Okay, cool.
Comes out next March, by the way. Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, directed by Sam Raimi.
Yeah. Exactly. Sam Raimi, right? Evil Dead. For it. I'm all with it. Let's make it happen. Come on.
I'm excited.
So yeah, Darkness was my number two. I loved everything about this episode when it came to like just experiencing what it would be like to go down that path and just see how it's never enough, right? I got to get stronger. I got to do more. I got to do more. And then you just end up becoming this dark creature, basically. And the way they showed us that, the way the progression happened, I thought it was awesome.
I would not be surprised if next week's episode is lighter and funnier. I think Thor's involved. So just as a counterpoint, I bet you they'll go that direction just to even it out a little bit.
Very nice.
We'll see. I prefer if they stay dark, but that's just me.
Well, if they just got darker and darker until it's just like child murders.
Yeah. Wait. No. Yeah. Well, I don't like dark stuff like you guys. So, I mean, I kind of like having a little lighthearted stuff once in a while. But
there were a couple of
jokes
in there. Yeah. It wasn't like, yeah, it wasn't like Hellraiser or anything.
Oh, Hellraiser. I can't wait for that series to come. I'm waiting for that one. We need some more Pinhead in our life.
Pinhead meets Dr. Strange. So my number two is what was different. And really it's about when I first saw this episode, I was not digging it at all. And the reason why is because I watched Dr. Strange first, and that's all about how he's an arrogant, self-absorbed a-hole. And that's a main part of that movie. And that, you know, he's so into his being a world-class surgeon, but he doesn't want to do the surgeries that might ruin his record. So he, even though it could help someone, he says no to those. And he looks at his phone while he's driving and gets in an accident, and just, you know, all around kind of a jerk. And also him and Christine aren't even together when that starts out. They were lovers, but not anymore. And I'm probably dumb for even thinking this, but when I was watching this episode, he's like so into her. And I thought, okay, the difference is that this happened earlier in his life when they were still dating, you know, because in each What If episode, there's what was different that caused this new timeline. So I just thought, okay, this is when they're still dating. And instead of him crushing his hands in the accident, she dies. And so, but he's so gaga over her. He's telling her, you know, that he'll do anything for her. And I'm just like, they aren't getting his character right. And so it takes me out of it. Like, I felt like they were changing his character to get to the story that they wanted. Let's make him, let's pretend that he's in love with her so that we can get to this tragic story of him doing whatever it takes to get her back. But then on second watch, I thought, wait a minute, this is so overt that it has to be on purpose. Like, she's saying, "Evening, handsome." And he goes, "This, no, I just pulled this out of the dryer." He's being all humble and self-effacing. She says, "You performed a radical hemispherectomy, and I would call that quite remarkable." And he goes, "Well, I would say the same about you," just sort of turning it back on her to say something nice about her. And so when I started thinking of the thing that's different, quote unquote, about this episode as more of what if Stephen Strange was a humble guy, or what if Stephen Strange wasn't so into himself and was more into his girlfriend, then I liked it more, because I think that's what was different. His character was different. And so that's why I don't think it was in the past. I think it's the same event that he's going to give a talk. But he has her with him because he's a different kind of a person. And so she stayed with him. She probably broke up with him in the movie because he was so arrogant and self-absorbed. But here he's more of a loving man and his focus is on her. And that ends up being the tragic part of it, is that when he is like that, he's still the kind of guy who thinks he can fix everything and gets fixated, like you were talking about earlier, Brian. And so it causes him to go down this dark path. When I thought of it more that way, then it changed from, man, these writers don't understand the character, to, oh, these writers made this really interesting change to the character that led down this dark path, but it was all intentional and makes sense. Then I love the episode more.
So it was like the he had to lose that which he most cared about.
Yes,
so
in both.
In our universe, it was his hands.
Yeah.
And because he was a cocky SOB. And then in this universe, it was Christine, because he was a more humble, you know, loving guy.
Loving guy. Exactly. Yeah.
And okay. See, and that does make sense. If you look at it from that perspective, then it does. Because you're right. I mean, you kind of go, wait a minute. Yeah, he was cocky and he wouldn't have cared about her. And
yeah.
I mean, he did and he didn't, you know?
Yeah. I mean, even in the movie, he says, we barely even dated. I mean, he's a jerk and they don't even get together in the movie. They're not, it's not, you think maybe they're going to get back together, but I don't, by the end of the movie, if I remember right, they're not together. So I don't even get the sense that in the movie they dated, but it doesn't seem like they were like each other's one true love or anything like it did in the, in the show.
Yeah. That's a good point.
So, all right, let's move on to our number ones. Brian?
By the way, these were in no particular order.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah.
The only other thing that I was going to mention, which I thought is it's something that's very important to me, not for everybody, is I really noticed the music, the soundtrack in this particular episode more than the others. And for me, a good soundtrack makes or breaks a TV show and a movie and all that. And so if it's drawing me in emotionally, which is exactly what it did, yeah, good job. Great job. I was sad by the end, and not just because of what was going on, but the music was really, I mean, just added to that emotion. It was perfect. So great job on the soundtrack.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more. In fact, did you watch Lost? Either of you guys?
I didn't know.
That show is one that the soundtrack elevates it a couple notches.
Yeah.
And recently I watched White Lotus on HBO, and same thing. Mm-hmm. The music really just adds so much to that. It can make or break something. And then Lock and Key. I don't know if either of you guys have seen that.
Love that show.
Oh, yeah.
I love that show. But to me, the music sounds way too Harry Potter-ish. And so it knocks it down a peg for me, even though I still like it a lot. I just wish that the music was a little more eerier on that show. Yeah. So anyway.
Well, you know, and not to get off on this, but we talked about the Suicide Squad. The three of us have talked about that, the new movie.
Yeah.
And that soundtrack drove me crazy because, and I'm not talking about like the actual fun pop songs and rock songs that they played. I'm talking about the actual instrumental score. It just didn't fit, you know?
Yeah.
And I thought it was kind of a poor, I don't know. It wasn't for me. But then again, everybody likes, or we've talked about The Mandalorian. The Mandalorian soundtrack used to drive the freaking bat crazy out of me. I hated it.
I love it.
I know you do. And that's the thing. And that's why I brought that up. Cause I'm like, I know you love that, but I was like, oh, I hate this thing. It's so annoying. Well, now I don't mind it as much, and it's very iconic and it fits and it's totally fine, but it's still not one of my favorites, but there's something about it that drives me crazy, but I know a lot of people love it. So
you're
my
not
whole
the
point
person
of that
who
is
said that. Yeah, it can be.
I know. The whole point is that everybody can like different things. So
yeah.
Yeah. I'm with you, Brian. Like, I don't even remember the Suicide. I don't even remember the soundtrack for that one. It was just not in. I don't remember it at all. It,
yeah,
didn't pay attention. But Mandalorian, yeah, I didn't like that one at all. Didn't like it.
Is it because? I mean, we covered the Mandalorian on this podcast, so I feel like it's okay to talk about it a little bit. But
that's right. I forgot about that.
Is it because you want and are used to John Williams, or does that not have anything to do with it?
No, not at all.
Yeah, no, it's just missing something for me. Like soundtracks for me, like Dances with Wolves, for instance, that soundtrack to me is just magical, right? It's It's just missing something. I don't really know how to pinpoint it. Maybe Ryan can explain it better than I can.
I've definitely heard that from some people, but we're gonna have to wrap up the podcast now. So we'll see you guys. No, I'm just kidding.
So you know the part, where it goes dun 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 dun. Yeah. See, and I can remember the stupid music too. No, actually, I like that part. That's actually the part of the music that I really like. The part that drives me crazy is when it goes dun 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 dun. Like, because it's kind of dissonant and it's not my style, and I don't. It needed to not do that. If it didn't do that, then like. That other music that I was humming was that's really, really good. And then what's the other one that I can't think of the other.
There's
part
this
of the...
kind of, well, it feels like they're trying to do like a space version of those old Clint Eastwood.
Yeah. And maybe that's what it is that the Good, Bad and the Ugly soundtrack, for example, like so good. Like that is so good. This was like kind of a pale imitation to me. So maybe that's what it is I'm trying to compare it too much to a Clint Eastwood style.
I mean, for me, that had it feeling more like a Western, which I think is the idea,
which is good too, though.
It's okay. Yeah. I think we're going to have to agree to disagree on that one, but no, we will agree.
That's totally cool. I'm glad you like it because
it's fine.
I'm glad you like it,
but I'm glad you like the music on this one, because I totally agree with you that music can make a big difference and, you know, it can really add to something or it can take away from it too. I got to go back and watch it again just so I can pay more attention to the music. I don't know if one thing I've noticed with the music on this show is that they will play like the Avengers theme a little bit when the heroes are together, or, you know, they'll play the different themes for the different heroes sometimes, which really brings back that nostalgic feeling. That's cool.
Yeah. And I don't know who this composer is, but her name is Laura Karpman. Mm-hmm. She's so far done, I think, every episode, but I've never heard of her. So it is kind of cool how she's kind of doing her own theme, but also, you know, paying homage to the original themes too.
Weaving in, the other themes.
I do like when superheroes have a theme, right? I notice a lot of these new superhero shows, they don't really have themes anymore. It's more like background noise almost.
Yeah.
And that's a thing that's been happening a lot lately. So it's nice to hear when the Avengers are together, you actually hear that Avengers team kind of play in the background. It gives you that feeling, right? Of like, okay, something, this is about to happen. Let's make it happen. But when the hero's out and the music's just not there, when that theme song's not there, it feels empty to me almost.
That's the one thing. Like, I think, I know, Brian, you liked the Zack Snyder Justice League, and I did too.
Oh, yeah.
Did you, Carl?
Oh, yeah. I loved it.
Much better. Much better than the Whedon version.
But I do, whenever they showed Wonder Woman, it was like, wah, 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 whatever her theme is.
Yeah.
It was ridiculous.
I like that theme.
It's a great theme, but it was like,
it is kind of funny.
It felt like they were pushing the Wonder Woman button every time or something.
Yeah. No, that's true. They did. Although it was a cool theme, though. But
a cool theme. Yeah. All right.
You need to do that, Jason. Make a audio clip of that, like you have that bullshit one.
Yeah
Make an audio clip Wonder version Woman of that Wonder Woman thing. Yeah, do that.
And we'll have we'll have a woman on as a co-host, and whenever she talks, I'll just press that button.
See, I like
that'd be awesome.
Sorry, that was a bad joke.
No, it's all good. Right,
let's go, Carl. What's your last point?
My last point is I'd say like time travel. Whenever there's anything that has to do with time travel, even though it's confusing, it makes me think, and I like that because it makes my brain work, right? Especially like when it comes to, like, if I went back in time to do this, how would it affect my current version of me if I came back, if that's even a thing, right? Or does it create this alternate universe? Or when I go back and make that change, do I just cease to exist at that point that I make the change, right? So those kind of things to me, really it makes me wonder, and I like shows that do that for me, basically. So in this one, I'll definitely say it reminded me a lot of Flashpoint, of Barry Allen going back in time to, you know, save his mom, and he saves his mom and then everything changes, right? Then his entire environment is completely different. It changed his life, it changed his mom's life, obviously, and it changed everyone around him. It's just those you have to think of, I guess, the ramifications of you doing what you want to do for yourself out of selfishness almost, right? You cause all these other problems to everyone else around you. And in Doctor Strange's environment, he destroyed the universe, basically, right? So
I think much worse.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you might think you're doing the right thing, but you're not doing the right thing by doing something so destructive, basically. So yeah, time travel is my first one. It reminded me a lot of Flashpoint, and I kind of think it makes me think.
Beautiful.
So yep.
That's cool. And it kind of goes into my, at least part of my last point here is because it's just some different references to the movies and kind of the MCU lore that was referenced. And one of them is time travel and how it is really deeply connected to Doctor Strange in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, because I mean, probably everyone knows this, but maybe you don't remember that his main like artifact is this Eye of Agamotto that he wears around his neck. And inside that is the Infinity Stone, the Time Stone. So that's why in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, there's a lot of time travel stuff with Doctor Strange. I don't know if there is as much in the comics. As far as I know, he doesn't have the time gem inside there in the comics. But anyway, also in the movie and in the show too, they talk a lot about how it goes against nature to manipulate time. And, you know, there's a lot of people saying you shouldn't be doing that. And even in the movie, that's why the Mordo character turned on Strange at the end, spoilers, is because he didn't appreciate that the sorcerers were manipulating time.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I have a good example of this. So let's say I went back in time and tried to do something. I got myself shot, right? What does Jason and Brian think? Like, what happened to Carl? Did he just disappear? Like, what happened? Where's this guy? He's just gone, right? Like,
yeah.
What happens to your lives, right? Because of my absence, like I just disappeared randomly. How does that affect you guys? You know, does your life change because you never then met me? And, you know, it's just one of those things where it's, who knows what happens. So we shouldn't be messing around with that kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, I think in the way that time works in Marvel comics and the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I mean, what did you just say? You went back in time and shot yourself? Is that what you said?
You got
shot. I went back in time to do something.
And you got
and shot. Got myself killed, right? Basically.
Yeah. So, I mean, for us, it would just be like you disappeared.
Yes.
In this moment. And that would be sad.
Yeah. Cause you had, now if you'd gone back and got your father shot.
Yeah. Then you would that would create another timeline in the Marvel. So we would still be in the timeline that Carl existed in.
But then here's the question, though. If you go back and you get your father shot, then Carl no longer exists. But then
so
if Carl
I couldn't
no
go
longer
back in time.
Exists, then he could never have gone back in time to get his father
shot.
That's
the thing is, I'm pretty sure in the way the Marvel time works, he'd go back in time, do something that got his father shot, but that would just create a separate timeline where his father didn't exist and he didn't exist. But in our timeline, his father still would have existed and so would have he.
Okay, so that would make sense.
It's just a splinter, basically.
Yeah, splinters. Yep, exactly. Huh, yeah, I love that. I love that kind of conversation.
Yeah. It's really interesting the way Marvel's set that up. With all the diverging timelines. And I'm stoked that they're going into that now in the Marvel Cinematic Universe and we're getting more multiverse stuff coming up. It's going to be really interesting.
Yeah.
Agreed. Yep, definitely.
Okay. And I think the What If series is actually going to play into that. I think some of these characters that we're meeting in the series might actually show up in some of the movies like Captain Carter or something. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's going to be as inconsequential as people might think.
I hope the Watcher shows up too, because I like his role. It's very interesting about how he sees it all, and he can warn kind of, but he can't do anything. And I like that. It's an interesting role.
There were some Watchers in Guardians of the Galaxy 2 in the end credit scene talking to Stan Lee.
Oh, yeah.
You guys keep bringing that movie up, man.
it's a fantastic movie. I mean, the first Guardians of the Galaxy is fantastic. So even if you don't like Chris Pratt,
I think Carl would like it, right?
I think so. It's a good movie. I think you would really, I'm thinking he'd relate well to Drax. What do you think about that?
I don't know. He would think it was funny.
Drax is awesome.
Yeah, Drax is the best. Okay.
They're all good.
Anything else on that point? Carl, time travel?
No, I think I said everything I had on my notes.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm good.
Let me go back. Okay, so I'm doing just different things, you know, referencing the movies and lore and stuff like that. So Doctor Strange goes to this library of Cagliostro because, according to legend, he knows how to break an absolute moment in time. Mm-hmm. In the movie, he's reading the Book of Cagliostro to learn how to manipulate time to fix his hands. Mm-hmm. And that's the book that the bad guy, I think it's pronounced Cassilius, stole the pages from, and Strange regenerates them and by reversing time on the book or whatever. And he also reads about Dormammu in the book and finds out about, you know, the big bad demon dude in Doctor Strange, and also finds out that the Ancient One has been drawing energy from the dark dimension to keep herself alive for hundreds of years. So it's an important book, but we never meet the guy who wrote it. Here in the movie, I mean, in the show, he meets this guy, Obeng, and he says, please tell me you're not Cagliostro. And he goes, the name's Obeng, librarian for the Book of Cagliostro. But the thing is, in the comics, Obeng is another name for Cagliostro.
Okay, I was wondering about that. I had a feeling that he was, okay.
Yeah, there's more to him, right? And also, like, he says, oh, you've been, you know, frozen time for centuries. Well, he looks like he's maybe 65, but not like 400 at the end of that. So, yeah, maybe there's more up with him. Maybe he wanted Doctor Strange to do all that stuff. Who knows? Yeah. Another thing, that tentacle creature.
Yes.
We saw him in the first episode.
Yes.
Red Skull called him forth.
Oh, that's right.
He killed him immediately.
Yep.
And so it's been suggested this is a multidimensional creature that's a Doctor Strange villain in the comics called Shuma-Gorath. So maybe it's the exact same one because he like goes from different realities. I don't know. But I don't think Doctor Strange killed it in this one. I think he just cut off some of its tentacles. So I feel like it might come back again. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, I like that.
A couple more. Doctor Strange's magic in this episode, I think he usually like glows green when he does things, but he started glowing red, which could just be like evil. But it's also what Wanda, she glows red when she uses her chaos magic to alter reality. So maybe he's like tapping into the same kind of chaos magic that Wanda uses.
Interesting.
And then last one, when Obeng says, come this way, Sorcerer Armani, and he goes, no, it's Strange. And he goes, not any stranger than any other name in this world. That's sort of like in the movie when he first meets the villain in that movie, Cassilius. How long have you been at Carmartage, Mr.? He goes, Doctor, Mr. Doctor, it's Strange. Who am I to judge?
Well, he also did that when Spider-Man met him. He's like, what's your name, Doctor Strange? Oh, we're going by superhero names now. Oh, I'm Spider-Man then.
That's right. I love that. I also have just some random notes that, you know, I usually have a bunch of notes that we didn't get a chance to talk about. In the main points, one is that all the main cast members returned: Rachel McAdams, Benedict Cumberbatch, Benedict Wong, Tilda Swinton, and this woman Leslie Bibb, who plays the newscaster Christine Everhart, who was in like, on the Iron Man movies. That was cool. I think they kind of yada yada'd over why he sought out the mystic arts exactly in the episode. I mean, presumably he decided. Like in the show, in the movie, it kind of makes sense. Okay, my hands are crushed. Modern medicine can't seem to help, so I'm going to go seek out some more like spiritual or whatever alternative healing methods. But here, it's like, okay, my girlfriend died. I'm going to try to bring her back from the dead. Is that what it was?
I think that's the reason.
That's a little bit far out, like right off the bat there. But okay, you mentioned the Watcher, Brian. I kept thinking, because in the comics, he always says, I never intervene. And then I would say about every third story, he intervenes. So I kept thinking that he was going to have more of a presence. And he did. And I thought it was so cool that Dr. Strange is like, who's there? And they ended up having a conversation. And he really teased intervening, like he thought about it, but decided not to. But I think that is a tease. And I'm pretty sure he will at some point. But that was cool, right? That They talked and everything. And he said, he's on the wrong path, but intervening to save his universe isn't worth risking all universes. So I feel like that's significant. Why would saving this guy's universe risk all universes?
Yeah.
I feel like that might come up in the future as to why. I mean, at the end of this, Doctor Strange is still alive. He's built this like protective crystalline cocoon around himself or something. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see him again.
Well, I was wondering about that crystalline cocoon thing at the end. It's like he's the only thing left in that universe, but is it going to last? Is it going to protect him, or is that eventually going to crush him? They didn't really show that, so I was kind of waiting. Yeah. What's going to happen here?
Yeah, I mean, maybe the point was just like, oh, look what you did. You did this all for love, and now you're alone all by yourself.
You're alone.
Yeah, forever.
But then maybe that's it. But maybe it's also that I feel like they're going to weave some of these stories together at some point and bring back people. Who knows? I don't know.
Dark Avengers.
Yeah, that'd be amazing. If they did that. It'd be so cool. I like the cape. Oh no, the cape actually. I mean, the fighting, the capes fighting each other was great, but when the the cape, because it's, you know, they give it a personality in the movie, and then evil Doctor Strange rips it and you can hear like a screeching sound. That was that was really sad.
It was. And here's what I'd like to know though, is why did the Dark Strange, we're gonna call him Dark Strange, why did his cape agree to go along with it?
That's it.
I mean, at one point he pulled a cape off of one of the creatures.
Oh, you're right.
He said, nice cape. So I guess that was an evil cape.
Maybe that was the one he grabbed. Ooh, okay, you might be right about that.
I think that's what happened.
Okay. I remember him saying that, but
Yeah. And then, two more things. Christine was like, oh, you did a radical hemispherectomy. That's great. Well, that's where half of someone's, usually a child's brain, is either totally or partially removed or disconnected from the rest. To help with epilepsy, it's a rare surgical procedure, but it seems like an echo of the idea of splitting Doctor Strange into two versions of himself.
I would not have caught that, so that's a good one.
Maybe. And then the last one, even though it was dark and there wasn't a lot of humor, I did kind of chuckle when Wong says, okay, wait, so the fabric of reality is breaking and only you can stop it because you're causing it. And Dr. Strange says, let's be honest, we've been through weirder. So that was good. That's anything else you guys want to bring up that we didn't talk about?
I think we covered everything I had anyway. I liked it. Like I said, it was good in that sense and well done. And I do kind of wish these were longer episodes. It's nice that
it really feels like they got to cram everything in.
Yeah, I think if they went an hour, they went, you know, Loki style or, you know, whatever the 50-minute style episodes are, you know, I'd say go for that. They could really develop these even more, and I think they'd be far more powerful.
Or maybe they're just leaving the door open because they have some other stuff planned that they're not telling us about yet.
Yeah, they could be intro episodes into all kinds of shows and movies.
There is a season 2 confirmed, so maybe they'll do longer ones then, because I agree. I feel like they're really short.
Yeah.
But that was great. Brian, I know that you have a deadline you got to get to, so you got to take off. But thank you so much for coming on. It was a blast. And yeah, you should definitely come on for another one sometime.
I would love to. And thank you for allowing me to come on and being a part of this. So yeah, let's do it again. Let's definitely do it again soon. And thank you, by the way, for listening to the show. And, you know, give Jason some support here, because you're awesome, Jason.
Well,
I love what you do, man.
By the way, people should definitely go to, what is it, therealbrianshow.com?
Yeah, realbrianshow.com.
Realbrianshow.com. Yep. Check out Brian's podcast. Brian has a great podcast where he talks about the things that light him up, and it's inspirational often. And as you can tell by what you just heard, he has really good energy. It's a real pick-me-up to listen to that podcast. So I would definitely recommend checking it out, realbrianshow.com.
Appreciate it. Yeah, we nerd out. We are multi-passionate. I like to say multi-passionate. And then some of my, UK friends are like, it's multi-passionate. I'm like, okay. It's pretty funny. But anyway, a lot of passions and excitement, you know, interests and stuff like that. I know there's a few of us out there that have that. Some of us don't. Most of us, you know, there's some of us that do. But yeah,
some of us get obsessively fixated on bringing our dead lovers back to life. And that's all we think about. Exactly, but other people like to get into other interests.
I wonder if we should nerd out on bringing our dead lovers back to life next week.
Sure, why not?
Hey. Thank you so much.
All right, man.
I appreciate it. This was so much fun.
Take it easy.
See ya.
And meanwhile, we'll take a break. There is more to come. Stay with us.
People are strange when you're a stranger. Faces look ugly when you're alone. Women seem wicked when you're unwanted. Streets are uneven when you're down, when you're strange. Faces come out of the rain when you're strange. No one remembers your name when you're strange, when you're strange, when you're strange.
All right, we're back. It's time for the news. There was a really interesting interview with Jeffrey Wright, who voices the Watcher on Entertainment Weekly. They say, I didn't expect to see an entire universe get destroyed as a result of Doctor Strange's actions. How's that going to influence the rest of the season now that we know there can be such wide-reaching consequences to a what-if question? He says, that remains to be seen. I'm not going to do the voice, but that remains to be seen. But I think this idea of his universe being destroyed is a wonderful metaphor too for all of us when we attempt the impossible, or rather when we try to reject our path, our destiny, or the inevitability of our lives. When a schism grows between our reality and our relationship to it, we do in fact kind of destroy our universe, you know? It unravels completely and we lose touch with our wisdom and we lose touch with a healthy relationship to our lives. And that in and of itself is the destruction of the universe, right? I really enjoyed the metaphor of that idea, and I don't want to give too much away about what comes after. The nature of the series is about exploring possibilities. And what I think is true of the MCU is that all of these threads can potentially weave themselves into the other. So it's possible. Just watch. That sounds almost exactly like what Brian was saying. In fact, I think he probably read this article and just like
just ripped it off.
Yeah, just ripped it off. Just kidding, Brian, if you're listening. But that's really interesting.
Yeah,
they go on, this is the first time we've seen the Watcher consider intervening in a universe's events, and he had an angry confrontation with Doctor Strange, which is the first time we've seen him actually speak with a character. Are we going to see more of that happening as the season continues? I mean, I hate when they ask like what's going to happen next, because it's like they can't tell you. But he's
always the same answer.
Yeah, it's like that remains to be seen. He says, in this instance, it speaks to Strange's mystical powers too, that he perceives him there. So there's two sides to that. But also, yes, the Watcher's compelled by the danger that Strange is conjuring, obviously not only for himself, but for his whole reality. For the Watcher, there's only so much he can only watch. He's not a voyeur for voyeurism's sake. He's in some ways made up of these characters. Without them, what does he watch? He's profoundly compelled by them, and maybe there's only so much he can take. We'll see. So do you agree with me that he'll be doing some major interfering by the end of this?
Oh yeah, I totally agree with that. I mean, he almost did it on this episode.
I know.
Right.
So, right. Right.
Yeah, the fact that he says, I can't tell you what's coming next. That tells me that there's going to be some stuff happening that, you know, for sure.
You're right.
So I'm looking exactly. forward to it.
Yeah, absolutely. They go on, they got two more questions. What was that like for you getting to play a more active role in this episode outside just narrating? He says, it's a shift in attitude for him, and it's a shift in purpose and intent and all of that stuff for him. That's a fun gear shift to play. And he also becomes less disembodied. For audiences too, that's the moment in which he steps into these worlds a little bit closer, steps a little closer to the audience as well. That's his moment where he knocks on the door. Yeah, because I was thinking, you know, in the comics, I don't know if you've seen, but the Watcher is this kind of goofy looking, big headed dude. And in the show, they've done a good job with these silhouettes of making him look more cosmic. So I was wondering how that was going to come off if they ever did have him kind of step forward. But I thought it worked pretty well.
Yeah, I thought so, too. It's nice to know that he says, I can only watch, but that's not actually the truth. He can't interfere if he wants to.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, and he always does end up interfering. They say, I'm not even going to do that last one. They're just asking him what's going to happen again. So two more things. The next one is that I've avoided watching the recent trailer for Spider-Man No Way Home. Did you watch it?
I did. I'm glad I didn't say anything about that earlier because I did watch it.
Yeah, I mean, apparently there's something in the trailer that probably connects or may connect to this episode, but I don't want to be spoiled on Spider-Man, so I didn't watch it. But I would say, if you want to know what I'm talking about, even though I don't know what I'm talking about, that you should go watch that trailer.
Yeah, you should go watch that trailer, Jason.
I mean, I'm already gonna see it, so I don't need to be convinced, you know. I'd rather just go in fresh.
For sure.
I actually watched like the first minute of it and I'm like, this isn't a teaser. They're telling me everything that's going to happen. And then last, I really haven't talked much about the behind the scenes of like the art animation in the series. So I thought it'd be fun to talk about that a little bit. The aesthetic of the show was developed by storyboard artist Brian Andrews and Ryan Meinerding, who's the head of visual development at Marvel Studios. He like helped design the look and feel of most of the Marvel movies, costumes and different designs and things. And in an article on TheVerge.com, he says the art style was strongly inspired by famed illustrator J.C. Leyendecker, aiming for a look that was both realistic and exaggerated. He says the fun of the show is taking something that's based in reality in a live action context and keeping the animated style relatively realistic. That's what Leyendecker did. He stylized and he idealized, but they were always meant to be more real than not. I looked up Leyendecker. He was a German American illustrator, considered to be one of the preeminent American illustrators of the early 20th century, best known for his poster book and advertising illustrations and covers for Saturday Evening Post. If you Google him, you can see the similarity between this his art style and What If, but I also put an example into the podcast. So if your podcast player shows chapter art, you should be able to look on there and see his art now, and you'll see that it's kind of similar to what's in the show. But Meyerding says the team didn't explore many different styles from his earliest days working on What If. Leyendecker was the goal. Quote, "I think we were homing in on Leyendecker because of his ability to stylize, to make characters feel monumental. If you're looking at translating a cinematic universe of superheroes into an animated form, there have been a lot of superhero projects that have been done before. What is the version that hasn't been done before, but also keeps them kind of realistic, keeps them feeling monumental and powerful?" So I don't know. How have you thought about the style of the animation in the show?
To me, it was fine. I mean, I thought the animation looked nice. I never once looked at the show and say, wow, that's kind of ugly. I actually liked the style a lot.
Yeah. When I first saw it, it looked old fashioned and I wasn't sure if I loved it. I thought it looked cool, but I wasn't sure. But with each episode, I'm like, yeah, this is really cool because it's moody and it's different than most things you see. And it has an old classic feel, but also modern, and it captures action really well, I think, you know. The fight. So yeah, I'm just thinking they really hit the nail on the head with it. Personally, that's what I feel.
Yeah, I was thinking when I heard about the show, I was thinking, I hope it's not going to look like Invincible, right?
Because yeah, I know.
To me, that quality is just absolute trash, right? Even though the show is great, the quality is horrible.
Yeah.
So when I saw this, I'm like, yes, this looks great. Thank you.
No, yeah, this is art. I mean, yeah, I think Invincible. I've seen worse, but it's not. It's just serviceable. That's what I would call it.
Right. I'm sorry. Trash wasn't the right word, right?
I mean, yeah, that's just my opinion. I mean, it's not great. It's not the best. All right. Awesome. Let's move on to some listener feedback. You want to go first?
Sure. This one comes from Davolino Bob Grippy. I loved it. The only episode I watched twice. I loved how no matter how Christine and him did, she always died. I'd be all, okay, well, I'm going to wrap you up in bulletproof, fireproof, bulletproof, and childproof cushions. Really go hardcore in safety activities. Notice how Evo Strange had a pointy beard. Him paying the price to have the ability to bring her back was sort of revenge of the Sith.
Yeah.
Guy foresees girl dying and does what he thinks is necessary and pays the price for the ability to save her, only to have the girl completely repulsed by what the guy has become, that demon at the end, right?
It's me, Christine.
Yeah. Who? When Strange turned around and said, "Is anyone there?" I would have said, "Nope, nobody's here." LOL.
Okay, cool. AJ Ebersole says, "It's a very dark and sad thought to have all this power, but you can't save the one you love without ruining the universe, which also destroys the one you love." I mean, that's the point. Like, if he really knew that the only thing that could happen was he would not only not save her, but the whole universe would die, then he probably should have done that. But he goes on, "The music played during the credits was so powerful and sad that it really made me feel the pain and hurt Dr. Strange was feeling. I also love the Watcher interacting with one of our characters. Is he going to start interfering with these multiverse/ decisions? Absolutely love this show and can't wait for next week. I also love the podcast and look forward to your thoughts each week." Thank you, man.
Yeah, he's absolutely going to start interfering.
Yeah,
so. For sure.
Maybe not next week, but by the time this season's over, I bet you what he does.
So I think this is Shay Weld. "This is gonna sound harsh, but my least favorite episode so far this season. Very heavy and well written, however. Still a good episode, but I don't know if I'm just not a Doctor Strange fan, or if I miss something, some of the levity of their previous episodes. I would be interested to see how this stacks up with the rest of the season.
Yeah, maybe Shay is more like Brian and doesn't like the darker stuff like we do.
Yeah, I could totally see that for sure.
Yeah, sure.
I loved it.
yeah, me too. Rita Catanella Arell says, it was the best one yet. There was so much packed in there. I felt like I watched an entire movie. When the two capes started fighting, I cheered, and I saw a parallel between Wanda's expanding Hex universe and his collapsing universe. And poor Christine to have to witness the end in such terror. Yeah, that ending really was pretty powerful.
Yeah, I mean, she came back and then had to experience that, right? That's wow.
Well, she come back to, right?
Well, that's kind of awful to do to someone you supposedly love.
Yep.
Derek O'Neill. Doctor Strange is my partner's favorite character, so we've probably watched the movie over 20 times. I absolutely love getting to spend the time with Stephen Strange and his feelings. It's something that they didn't know in the movie, and having waited so long for a sequel, I'm glad they've done the relationship more justice finally. Also, the animation here was the best in the show so far. Amazing.
Nice.
I agree with that. As far as the movie, you didn't get any character development as far as I remember.
Yeah, I mean, well, it felt rushed to me the way that I like that he went looking for alternative solutions to his problem, but he then just became this mystical sorcerer. It felt right. Like this like weekend camp or something.
That's what I thought from right. 15 minutes from Strange to Doctor Strange.
Yeah. I still liked it though. I especially loved all the trippy visuals.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Like everything folding in on itself. That was so cool.
You have to watch that when you have a good whiskey in your hand.
Yeah, it was incredible. Like, man, whoever figured out how to do that, I've never seen anything quite like it. It kind of reminded me of Inception a little, but just turn the dial up on it.
Definitely.
Okay. And Greg Schwamm says, I thought that this week's episode was just as heavy as last week's, although I didn't feel nearly as crappy about it at the end, probably because that dimension or version of reality was isolated and destroyed. Therefore, while an entire reality was obliterated, I didn't have to think about how it would affect our characters. So probably worse, but I didn't see any of it, so I didn't think about it. I thought the concept of splitting the Stranges was really entertaining, and seeing the alternate Strange succumb to depression and horrific choices was very similar to watching Anakin become Vader. That's really interesting, Greg, because sometimes I've thought, okay, what if there was this button that I had and I knew that if I pressed it, it would erase all of reality. Then I start thinking, you know, if I did that, it would really eliminate so much suffering. And I don't think I would do it, but I have had the thought. If everything was gone, then all the suffering would be gone and there'd be no like consequences.
Nothing to yeah.
Nothing to worry about. But then sort of the joy and the happiness and the art and all that. So I think I'd not press it.
I mean, all the good stuff you get, right? Yeah, I would definitely not press that button either.
It's an interesting thought, though. And then last, we have one call from Steve Brown.
Okay, House Podcasting. Wow, this is Steve. What if Doctor Strange lost his heart, not his hands, or not his hands, but his heart, whatever it is. Wow, such a, I don't even know where to begin with this one. So dark, very depressing, but good. Good solid episode. It's going to take more watches than just two, I think. And gosh, that animation is still, I'm just loving it and cannot wait to hear y'all talk about this one, whoever the co-host is this week. All right. Talk to you later.
Steve's great. He calls in just about every episode, and it's even cooler that he does that because he has his own podcast, Panels to Pixels, where he's also talking about What If. So if you guys want to hear more of Steve, you should check that out.
Oh, I didn't know that. I'm going to have to check that podcast out. Steve is awesome.
All right. That's our show. Thank you for listening, everybody. And thanks for coming on, Carl. I'm glad you were able to come on. That's cool.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's always fun.
It was a good one. I think when we did our Zedhead show and we talked about our top five favorite Marvel movies, which is something that we did, by the way, listeners. Zedhead Shows, my Patreon exclusive podcast, Carl was on recently. We did our top five Marvel movies. Wasn't Doctor Strange one of yours?
It was one of mine.
Yeah,
it was. Yep.
So even though it didn't work out to have you on for Iron Man, which was your number one, that's cool at least that we got one of the ones that was on your list.
For sure. Yeah, it worked out.
So if you guys want to write in or record a message and send it in, you can email it to us at talk@podcastica.com.
We also put up a post for each week's episode on our Facebook page at facebook.com/podcastica.
And be sure to check out the other great podcasts at podcastica.com. Also, as I mentioned before, you can find Brian over at The Real Brian Show. It's a fun podcast. And Carl, do you have anything you want to promote?
I'll promote The Real Brian Show as well. I mean, it's a great show. It's just a bunch of people just nerding out the entire time, right? So it's a great show.
You've been on there a handful of times, right?
I've been on a couple of times, yeah. And I've always had a great time, just like your show. I always have a great time when I'm here.
Thanks.
The two times I've been on so far.
Yeah. It's just fun. It's a lot of fun. Next episode, What If, Season 1, Episode 5. I think it's a Thor one. I think Chris Hemsworth is back for it. I really don't know the premise, but they've all been good so far, so I'm excited. And that'll be Daphne and Wendy, who I was on with for Handmaid's Tale. So if you guys were listening back then, you'll be excited to know that that team will be reunited. All right, that is our show.
Thanks for listening.
That was strange. I'm just kidding.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for a limited time and subject to change. Max 1 offer per account.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.